Christ Oracle Community proudly presents the JDE Connection, a Quest on-air podcast production.
This podcast explores and showcases how JDE customers are harnessing specific functionality and capabilities to drive business success.
Hello, JDE Connection listeners. Welcome back. I'm Chandra Wabshaw, one of your podcast hosts, and I'm the manager of business applications at Brightview Landscapes. With me this week and every week is my friend and podcast partner, Paul Houtcooper, Vice President of J.D. Edwards Product Development at Oracle. Hey, Paul, how are you today?
Doing good. Doing good. A lot of stuff happening in JDE land. People were excited about Blueprint 4D. Some couldn't make it. A lot of folks wanted to hear, whether it was business partners, sales, customers. A lot of folks heard good things, so they wanted to hear about it. So we've been busy trying to get everybody up to speed on what we covered. And then, of course, prepping for the next conference. What are we going to cover at InFocus? What's going to happen? How do we take it down a level from the high level thought leadership and some of the ideation that we shared at Blueprint 4D? How do we bring it down a level to make it real? So we're challenged to go do that. And of course, wrap up release 26 and make sure that that is another high quality release for us. So things have been a little hectic lately. And of course, I bought a house today. Oh, well, you know.
You did what? You bought a house?
Yeah,
today?
Par for the course. Yeah. Yeah, par for the
Congratulations.
Course.
Congratulations. Yeah. Wow.
Just woke up, said,
exciting.
Sure. You
know. I woke up and said, I think I'll buy a house today.
Yeah, what the heck?
Wow. Fabulous. That's awesome. Super excited for you.
Yeah, very
good.
Cool.
Yay. Very, cool. So, very fun.
Yeah, things are moving, so to speak.
Nice.
So, how about
and
you?
And you're
apparently.
Moving.
Yeah, apparently. My daughter Molly's already scoped out which room is hers, and she's already scheduled the housewarming party before I am there. I don't know. Anyway, let's not go there. Let's move on. So how are things going for you?
Well, things are going. I was able to see that the permit for the work that needs to be done on my house is out there. At least it shows the status of documents uploaded. So I figure that's a good sign.
That's helpful.
There was nothing there the other day. So I'm taking that as forward progress and I'm calling it good.
We have other documents.
I know, I have documents. Yay. Other than that, it is about my normal, you know, let's queue up a thunderstorm because it's, you know, 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And if power goes out, I apologize in advance. I will rejoin as soon as it comes back. Because that does happen down here quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I know my neighbor said the same thing. It flashes at his house too. Because I was like, "Is it just me? Is something wrong with my house?" He's like, "No
comment." I mean,
yeah. Well, yeah, don't. Because I don't need any more surprises. Thank you. So anyway, yeah. Other than that, had a nice long run this weekend. Which, boy, is it hot down here and humid. Even though I get up and try to get most of it done in the dark. And then Sunday, though, I didn't roll out of bed as early. So by the time I got done running, which was not all that late in the morning, like still before 8, I finished and it was like 85 degrees in the sun. It was not pleasant.
No.
It was hot.
Yeah, I don't envy you. I mean, when it's that hot, you lose liquid and your core temperatures goes up and it's just hard to get cool again. Mm-hmm. I don't have that problem. It's about mid-60s in the morning here when I'm running, and it's nice and dry, so you don't have that. I mean, I got the altitude thing, but hey, you get acclimated to that, no big deal. So, sounds like a personal problem.
I think it is. Maybe I'll come visit you in your new house so I can train at altitude and be cooler for a couple months. But then I'm going to want to come back because it's nice here in the winters.
Yeah. I mean, come train at altitude before your Marine Corps marathon. Maybe that'll happen. Yeah. There you go.
That may be. Who knows? Give it a whirl.
All right. Well, what are we talking about today? What was our topic?
So our topic is a continuation of last week where we talked about resources for the orchestrator. In that conversation, we had mentioned, you know, hey, you guys present on these things. Yes, orchestrator's been around 10 years, but for example, me, I'm just kind of starting to dive into the orchestrator. And I know there's others out there who are or who haven't even yet been able to dig into it, whether it's they are finally on our tools release that allows it, or there's just been so much work they haven't had time. So I figured we could just kind of do a little like kind of introduction to Orchestrator. We're not going to get super technical in this call.
Okay, that's good.
You weren't ready for that?
I didn't bring anybody with me. I mean, it would have been, You know, I could have brought some of the engineers from the Orchestrator team on and they could get technical with us, but maybe that's another episode as we bring them on and we can pepper them. Maybe we bring on like Andrew and a few others, you know, Lisa Tran and you guys can pepper them with your questions about Orchestrator and see what happens. And I'll just sit back and eat popcorn and MC the darn thing. That'll be awesome. I'll referee it, actually. Yeah. Not MC it, but referee it.
Okay. Referee it? There you go. Uh-huh. Maybe that's a better term. Yeah. Like I said, we're not going to get into the technical setup on this call, but we are going to go over just some introductory, I don't know, terms that you might hear when somebody talks about the Orchestrator. And then I do, though, before we kind of get into it, want to just highlight a couple prerequisites. Hopefully this isn't too technical. But I wanted people to know, like, if you are interested in the Orchestrator, you do have to be running a tools release that is above or at or above 9.2.4. Okay. So that's your minimum. So I want people to know that. I wanted them to know you also have to have an AIS or Application Interface Services server. That is, you know, a kind of a foundation for the Orchestrator. So It's basically a REST services server that when it is configured with the Enterprise One HTML server, it allows enterprise form, you know, it allows access to the Enterprise One forms and data. So,
okay. I mean, people that maybe this, some of this is new to go back to our CNC episode with Clayton, perhaps. Yes. We're listing off a bunch of components, but please continue.
Well, and also they need to make sure the orchestration feature is enabled and that all the related UDO security is set up properly. So guess what?
We have an episode on that, do we?
We do. That was in episode 67. So people should listen to that one. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Sweet. And then there's like two other things that the Orchestrator guide actually highlighted in this section. They're a little more technical. Something about key stores that are needed on HTML servers and AIS servers, and that your HTML server needs to be configured as a trusted node for the security server. Mm. So if you have questions on that, go talk to your CNC or your system admin, because I'm not going to give a good explanation on that.
Okay.
Not my skill set.
All right. But you know, we at least covered it. We may not be able to explain it, but we covered it and we know who to point you to if you have questions. That's good. We're being resourceful.
Exactly. Okay. I want to tee this off as using a question I actually asked you the other week.
No, the Minnesota Vikings will not win the Super Bowl this year. Sorry.
That's always your answer. No. Anything Vikings?
Yes,
no.
Cheese curds are considered a vegetable. Okay. Any other dumb question? I mean, good questions.
No, my question was, how would you describe the Orchestrator to someone maybe that's in your C-suite that maybe doesn't know J.D. Edwards? Like, how would you describe it?
Well, did you maybe ask ChatGPT to see what it said?
I did. Well, played. I did, actually. And we'll talk about that, but I want to hear what you
have. You
want to
hear
say.
Mine first? Oh, geez.
I do.
Oh, gosh. I'd rather hear that first and then be able to judge off of that. But no, it's fine. I will admit it's difficult sometimes to actually describe exactly what Orchestrator does, because I understand it more from an application developer standpoint, where Orchestrator really allows me to run my applications without ever rendering those applications. So there's a concept in manufacturing called blind execution. So you can do blind issues. super backflush, completions with backflush and super backflush. And what it does is a blind execution of some of the steps. So you complete the work order and it blindly issues the material and blindly does the hours and quantities. And what we mean by blindly is you don't get prompted to confirm what it is that gets entered or anything like that. And instead it just runs the business logic behind the scenes. Blind means we automated it. In other words, I can create an orchestration that's going to run sales order entry and you'll never see a sales order entry. I'll configure the orchestration in a way to prompt you for the key fields that you need to enter. You know, what's the item? What's the date that you want? How much do you want? Etc. And it'll automate the entry of that and maybe the return of, well, here's how much, here's when, blah, 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 blah. You know, give you the totals, right? And without you having to actually interact with the application itself. So it greatly simplifies things. And this is why we say that it automates your day in the life, because maybe you've got a process that takes 6 screens. Okay, well, yesterday I could have automated that for you by creating a business function or a UBE that you could run on a schedule that would string together the business logic behind that. So I would codify it. What the beauty of Orchestrator is, I don't need to codify anything. The beauty of Orchestrator is I can go and create an orchestration that simply executes that stuff without rendering it. So again, blindly executing it, and it's not hard-coded, right? So the objects that it's using, the applications that it's using, maybe even the batch processes that it's using, all can continue to grow and evolve and do everything behind the scenes, right? And your orchestration inherits all that goodness as we go along. Whereas if I codify some of this stuff, that's not necessarily going to be true, because I've literally had to code it, I had to build it, I had to deploy it, I had to do all that stuff. It takes a lot of work to get all of that correct. And then it's pretty much set in stone. It doesn't move or evolve the same way an orchestration would. So I don't know. I mean, that's the way I look at it. As a result of doing that, though, not only can it then run something blind, which means I can automate a task, I can also then run something that serves as an integration. The other thing that Orchestrator can do, it can make external calls to REST-based services, which allows me to do external integration. And with the outputs that we receive back from those integrations, we can then launch other JD Edwards business logic to complete tasks and whatnot. So again, it serves as a great integration tool and automation tool. Since I can automate it and run blindly, I can also then, we gave it an assertion framework, so I can also validate the back end, which means it can also then serve as a testing tool for me. So, I mean, there's all these different ways, but what it basically does, well, it's so broad, right? Because it has these other things, you know, you can do direct data access requests, right? So you can inquire to the database through the orchestrator if you want to. You can call external REST, like I said. You can create automated captures of your form interactions. It just does all of that. And so it serves as this amazing tool to allow you to accomplish so much when it comes to simplifying the day in the life, when it comes to connecting various services, when it comes to even testing your system. So long-winded, I know, and probably a little bit more than Chat gave you.
Yeah, Chat gave me a little less, but maybe I didn't prompt it for a very lengthy answer.
Okay.
I understand my C-suite wants short and sweet. So it said, JD Edwards Enterprise One Orchestrator is a powerful automation and integration tool built into the JD Edwards ERP system. It enables you to streamline business processes by connecting JD Edwards with other systems, devices, or data sources without needing heavy custom development.
And I listen to that and I say that underserves it, because the value isn't strictly in connecting other systems and devices and data sources. The value is in the automation of what you do within JD Edwards. So when this first came on, you can literally, the idea that we have now is like AI agents and something that can interpret what's happening and take action on your behalf. While Orchestrator doesn't have the intelligence that ChatGPT or, you know, our Gen AI services does, the reality is it can do those things, right? You can create an orchestration that monitors your system for certain business conditions, and then based on those conditions, takes specific action on your behalf without you having to intervene, and then notifies you of what the condition was and what the action was and what the result was. And boy, that sounds very agentic. And I know it's not. I think we all understand there's a big difference there, but it has those elements, and it had those elements long before this AI revolution hit. And so it really opens up the door quite a bit for J.D. Edwards. So anyway, I think chat just underserves it. I appreciate what you mean, though, but you know, the executive wants an executive summary of what this is capable of doing. And unfortunately, the way you're going to describe it when you do that underserves it and sounds like anything else.
Yeah.
Right? What does a business function do? Business function automates and serves as an integration tool. It also, you know, can connect with other systems. Okay. It accesses data. Okay. You know,
yeah,
guess what?
I know.
I mean, what does ERP do? It automates your day in the life. Well, what does Orchestrator do? Automates the automation of your day in the life.
Day in the life.
You know, so.
True.
So.
I'm automating my automation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it. I don't agree necessarily with what it provided, especially knowing that we had a conversation about it. I liked your way. I just need to find a way to kind of.
Condense it.
Yeah, condense it just a bit to be able to answer that when I am asked, because I expect I will be. So, yeah.
I mean, anyway. a simpler way is, and I've said this even this week, Orchestrator is a proprietary RPA tool for J.D. Edwards. So if the executive is familiar with robotic process automation. Orchestrator is a robotic process automation-like tool for J.D. Edwards. And just like your RPA tools, they can be used for integration, they can be used for automation, and they can be used for testing in a similar way. It's just that it's easy for me to say, proprietary to J.D. Edwards, meaning you're not going to be able to use it to really orchestrate things outside for J.D. Edwards, right? So you'd have to go to another tooling for that. But that might be the... If you had to give that two sentence or one sentence answer, it's a proprietary RPA tool for J.D. Edwards.
I like it. And I'm sure I'm probably not the only one that has had that question. How do I explain this to somebody above that maybe doesn't know that much about J.D. Edwards? So they might be three levels removed and you want to explain what you're doing. I think it's a good topic for us to cover. Hence why I wanted to ask it today. So.
No, that's fair. Totally fair. Yeah. I apologize for the long-winded answer. I can keep going. I mean, why RPA doesn't describe it fully and what the benefits of a proprietary one versus a non-proprietary one, but we have to move forward with what you actually wanted to educate people about today. So,
okay. So when I looked at the Orchestrator guide, just trying to get some flavor for how it describes it, it said orchestrations provide access to your Enterprise One data and applications as a services. Technically, industry standard REST services, which you can easily create using the Orchestrator Studio. So the Orchestrator Studio is a web-based tool or application that business analysts, supposedly, I'm still on the fence on this one, and technical developers alike will use to create, test, and deploy orchestrations and even notifications. So that was what I kind of pulled out for people just as kind of a baseline definition.
I can see the debate happening in my organization around the use of technical in front of developers there. We didn't want to call them application developers, but we didn't want to call them tools developers. So what could we come up with that doesn't actually pigeonhole anybody and exclude anybody? So we're going to go technical developers. How about software developers? No.
No.
Software engineers. Okay, never mind. So we had to, wow. I bet we're you gonna... that entire sentence, there was more time spent around the word technical than anything else in that sentence.
I love it. That's awesome. So I thought maybe we could just do a run through of the components within the orchestrator. And obviously, this is in no particular order. You don't have to do one before the other type of thing. Well, you might if you're trying to feed data from, you know, a data request into a form request. But we'll get into that in some other episode. So I think in general, they refer to a lot of the components as service requests, right? It's just a general term for something that's providing some service or some work somewhere. So sure. I think one of the first ones, at least, that was easiest for me was a form request. And the reason I say that is because not only can you create a form request within the Orchestrator Studio, so when you open the form request, when you click the button for form request, you can tell it which form, which version that you want to use, but you can also use the process recorder within the application to actually open the specific version and a form and record the exact steps that you're going to take, which for me, it's almost like I think of it as if you used a lot of Excel back in the day and recorded macros. Is that a macro? Yeah. That's how I think of it. I'm like, this is so handy. To me, it's a really great place for people to start who want to see what does it look like in the studio if I were to do this, but do it from actually recording the steps that I would go through.
Right. Originally, we didn't have process recorders, so that actually came up after the fact. So we did have form service request, and you had to figure out how to piece together the form service request to represent what you were doing in the application. And you can imagine that that can be a difficult process, right? So you're now writing down every step that you go through and you're trying to figure out, how do I represent this within a form service request? And then we came up with, you know, the process recorder as a way of, well, could we actually record what somebody's doing and translate it for them and generate that form service? So it really, really did accelerate the development of form service requests by coming up with, you know, the process recorder, but that was filling a need because, yeah, it's difficult sometimes to translate what you were doing. That's just the reality of it. Now, you know, as I was describing Orchestrator, that's where I started, right? Is, hey, guess what? You can run J.D. Edwards applications without rendering them. And that really is what a form service request is intended to do. Sometimes you need more than that. Sometimes there's a more efficient way to get data than necessarily going into the application that you're used to using, the work with work orders and clicking, you know, enter, data, filter, click, find. There's a better way to do that, a more efficient way to do that. Or the forms that we have don't have the combination of data that you want, right? So you really want to go to the database, hence the next service request, right? So that's the data request. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you can see, I like to describe it, you know, as we evolve things, right? So there may be a more efficient way to get the data by going directly to the data. So we do give you data requests, which allow you to access the tables, the J.D. Edwards tables, the J.D. Edwards schema, in a way that also adheres to security. That was what is also very, very important. Many have found, hey, guess what? If I go directly to the database, maybe things are more efficient. Yes, they can be. However, row security doesn't apply. Mm-hmm. Business unit security. Guess what? Your data decimal, when you look at the data, if you look at the raw data in the database, doesn't represent, you know, it doesn't look right.
No. What about those dates, those Julian dates? Those don't look right.
No.
Weird.
Currency, same thing. So again, a data request is a way of accessing the tables directly, but also adhering to J.D. Edwards security. And of course, you're applying all of our formatting.
Which is great. You know, it does give you a way to give people access to the data that maybe do need a little bit more than what you get through the actual application, right? Mm-hmm. And this is a great tool for them then, since it follows that security.
Yeah, or less, to be clear. Sometimes,
well,
guess what? Yeah. Our work was, They're trying to serve everybody. So, you know, we've got massive grids and massive amounts of filter fields. It's a lot more efficient to go after that one column that you need with the two fields that you need than it is to use a massive application with 20 filter fields and 100 grid columns. You know, there's just more efficient ways to access the data as well. So I, you know, sometimes it's more complicated. So you go data service. Other times it's actually more simple. So you want to go data service. And to be clear, we talked about security. Another concern is, well, can I use Orchestrator to update the database directly through a data service request? No. Yeah. These are read-only components.
Yes. Right? Good thing to highlight.
Yeah. So if you want to update data, you can do that through the business logic, which you can orchestrate, but you can't do it through a data request explicitly.
In Focus 2025 is coming, and you're invited to the JD Edwards Event of the Year. Join the JDE community, Oracle product teams, and industry experts in Denver, Colorado, Tuesday, September 9th through Thursday, September 11th. For three powerful days of learning, networking, and innovation. Save extra when you register a group of four or more. Dive deep into key topics like Release 25 and 26, Orchestrator, AI, Automation, UX1, and more. All designed to help you get the most from your JD Edwards investment. Visit questoraclecommunity.org/infocus to learn more and register. That's questoraclecommunity.org/infocus. We hope to see you in Denver. All right. One of the other components, reports. So a report request will actually run any UBE that you specify, and you can specify the inputs. So the report version, the data selection, the data sequencing. So it's just like if you had submitted it, opened up our whatever, insert your favorite report here. I've got a few of them. It's just like I had submitted it from right within E1. So it's
So if you go into batch versions and you specify all of that and you launch it from there, you can do that. You're doing the same thing here. And yes, we have a scheduler for our batch reports, but we also have a scheduler for orchestrations. Same sort of concept. You can manage your batches in this way as well, or because your orchestration may involve a full business process, which includes a batch run, you may want to include that in there. And then you may want to run that business process on a schedule, right? We're not going to schedule sales order entry. Typically, interactive, not going to do it, but in this particular case.
But I might want to schedule sales update.
Correct.
Watch lists. A watch list will return the information that's available, including maybe the number of rows, anything that might have triggered a warning or a critical threshold, or some of the other parameters that are out there. So it's usually the number of rows is shown as a little number in that little badge for a watch list. So,
So you can see where this is leading a little bit, right? When you start to look at these various components that we're talking about, once I'm able to wrap some of this stuff with rules and I think about wrapping it with schedules and whatnot, this is where that concept that I was talking about before, where let's monitor for certain business conditions, watch list. Let's evaluate those conditions, rules, to be able to take specific action, form request, data request, report, et cetera. You see where it's going. So,
yep, I do. And then there's something called a connector. So orchestrations can invoke another orchestration. So we have an orchestration invoking another orchestration, or maybe it's invoking another notification. So that connector request is used as that step within a main orchestration to invoke that other orchestration or notification. So
the way to effectively string certain things together.
Exactly. And then you have custom requests. So a custom request allows you to use a Groovy scripting language or Java to create an orchestration step that performs any service you can conceive of and develop. Well, for me, that's not going to be much because I can't conceive of anything in Groovy or Java, just so you know.
Well, you, but you may come up with a requirement that yes. could be solved by this. So the idea,
true.
One of the things I'd say here just for fun is, well, engineers are going to be engineers. So here we are orchestrating this whole thing and getting away from having to codify anything and then and get away from custom code. And then what did we do in the middle of an orchestration? We go, well, if you can't do it in an app and you can't do it in batch and you can't do it, you know, through a data request and you can't get your condition right through the rules engine, maybe you got to do something custom. So let's give you the ability to sling that custom code anyway and put it right in the middle of an orchestration. Yes, because we're not going to take coding away. We just can't. We have to put it back in. We cannot provide a solution that doesn't allow you, the developer, the engineer, whatever, the technical developer, as we called them,
yes,
to the get in there. Developer. And sling some code. You just have to be able to do it one way or the other. So we did it.
That's right. So. Absolutely. I love it. That's awesome. And then messages. So obviously a message request will allow you to send a email message to Woo. One or more. So you can create the subject and the body of the message, including text substitution variables that might be populated from something within the orchestration. And you can include links on those messages. So it might be into JD Edwards application. It might be to an external URL, or it might be a link that might launch another orchestration or maybe a notification or even a link to an attachment. Or launch an attachment. So you can do a lot of stuff with those messages. Pretty cool stuff.
Absolutely.
And you okay. mentioned this one earlier. Rules. Yay for
right.
rules.
So now that you have all these different ways to create mm-hmm. service requests to either get data, access data, run processes, run mm-hmm. batches, do your own custom coding, you know, whatever it happens to be, right? Send messages, check for thresholds. It wouldn't be the same. You need some sort of conditioning around there to make decisions about how to respond in certain instances, right? Doesn't yeah. apply to every orchestration. There are certain things you no. just want to automate and straight through, but many, depending on certain conditions, you want to take certain actions. So yes, we do give you a rule and ability to create a rule and to do evaluations. And as we said before, if you got to do something more complex in the evaluation, that's where your custom service step comes in for Groovy and Java, but otherwise the basic stuff we cover in a rule.
Yeah, absolutely. And that makes sense. I love these actually. If then logic, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If it's
yeah.
true, do this. If it's false, do that. It's great. Mm-hmm. So you can then, okay, I ran this process. I ran this UBE. It completed successfully. Send an email to this person. It failed. Send an email to this person. You know, I mean, obviously we can get a lot more complicated than that, but I like that. I love yep. that. I think it's cool.
And imagine this is all at your fingertips. So, I mean, how mm-hmm. many things have you wanted to do where you come in the morning and you run a batch and then based on whether or not it passed or failed, you contact one or the other or you pass it along the line. Mm-hmm. What happens if I could just run that myself on a schedule, you know, before I come in the morning and I can put that condition in the orchestration and I can have those notifications sent and now I'm not the one having to manually kick that off, manually make that determination, manually send that message, right? Again, this starts to sound, this is automation and we're all now hip on automation because we have AI and what we're describing is like an AI solution, even though it's not AI and whatever the definition is these days, right. But you get a lot of the benefits. All right, continue on. Let's see, what do we got next? Cross-reference.
Yes.
Well, I think everybody understands what a cross-reference is, right? You got to define relationships between data, right? Right. So there may be certain instances where you do need to do some level of mapping. So maybe you are calling an external service and you bring some information back. You need to be able to cross-reference that back into something within the existing system. There are so many different instances and reasons why you would want to have to do some level of mapping. And that's what cross-reference helps you do.
Yes. Whitelists. So a whitelist is like an, I don't know, initial pass or fail check of an incoming message's signature to make sure that it is okay. So it just adds another level of security to the orchestrator.
Mm-hmm.
I know those are more common on the infrastructure side. That's what I know about those.
And then we already mentioned the last one, which is schedules, right? We're able to actually put these things on schedules. So you can create these orchestrations to run, whether it be per day, per hour, at a specific time, every Monday, you know, whatever it happens to be, you can actually control it. And this is where, for me, that's where I started to get really, really excited about what Orchestrator was going to allow us to do, because it is really enticing to think about being able to create something that can actually monitor your system, respond to a specific condition, take an action. You really are embedding intelligence and decision-making and the ability to take action directly in the system via this, and you're just orchestrating it. So there's a lot of power here for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Cool.
All right. Well, I think that probably covers, I mean, an intro to Orchestrator and what an orchestration is and the different elements of it, the components of it, you know, and some examples or thoughts on what it can do.
Yes. And we'll get into more detail on these, you know, in future episodes. You know, I know we talked about, once I kind of get mine wrapped up, we can maybe dive in and kind of pick it apart and see what I used and how I did it. And I'm sure we've got to have some listeners out there that would love to share some of their orchestrations.
Some of their wins.
Fabulous.
I think it'd be very cool to look at some of the wins people have had and some of the creative things that they've done that they didn't realize even when they started that they were going to be able to do. It'd be fun to hear those and share those. And like I said, maybe even I pull some folks from the product team on and we can have that collaboration and just have that exchange, and it'd be fun for everybody to hear.
I think so. I like it.
Cool. All right. Well, with that, of course, we got to end with a Midwesternism. So what are we going to do this week?
We're going to go with another colloquialism. And each week I'm getting better at saying the words.
I was just going to say that was very articulate. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I've been practicing over the last couple weeks, once a week at least. So this week is one that my father said to me as a kid, kind of frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Hold your horses.
Oh, gosh.
Right. So it means to wait or slow down. I would always like to move quick. And, you know, he was always like, hold your horses. Jeez.
I think when people go back to the Midwest, I'm sorry, I won't speak for everybody. Sorry, I'll just say, when I go back to Wisconsin, I go back to Minnesota, things actually do slow down. And it's not an insult or anything like that. It's not to speak to like that. It's just the fact that the pace just seems to be different. And if you come in guns a-blazing, ready to go, just the first thing you're going to hear somebody tell you is, hey, hold your horses. Just, you know, back off, slow it down,
slow
dial it back. Dial it back a couple notches. All right.
Yep. So true. And it's not that Midwesterners are lazy or slow or not hardworking.
Or not intense. Or not excited. Yeah. You know, I mean.
They absolutely are. It's just you're going to find differences within them where somebody's like, whoa, hold your horses. Let's step back and make sure we're doing all the steps in the process. First of all, that's, you know, it may even come in a business. I think I've said it at work before. Hold your horses. Let's slow this down. Let's walk through this. Make sure we're getting it right. So.
Sure.
Yeah.
Also enjoy the moment. I think there's another aspect to that, you know, be in the moment, enjoy the moment. Let's not just rush through this whole thing. We have a moment here. Took us a while to get here. Let's suck it all in, enjoy it, respect it, appreciate it before we get all excited and move on to the next thing. Let's just hold your horses and settle down, enjoy, be present. Life moves fast. Right. Take a few minutes. A little Ferris Bueller there, I'm sure. But anyway, we'll move on. So
awesome. Well, for questions, feedback, or ideas for future episodes, contact us at thejdeconnection@questoraclecommunity.org. Until next time, let's keep learning, sharing, and most importantly, laughing together. Toodles.
See ya.
Thank you for tuning in for today's episode of the JDE Connection, a Quest On Air podcast production. Show notes and links can be found at questoraclecommunity.org/JDE Connection.
To learn more about what's happening in the Quest JD Edwards community, visit our website at questoraclecommunity.org/JD Edwards.